Okay. So today is the 16th of July, 2019, Tuesday. So we will get ready for puja class. Okay, 挂在这个小的。 Okay, let us compose our mind, develop the faith, sadha, virya, then mindfully we shall commence the puja chanting. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Quan Sin Pusa. Namo Quan Sin Pusa. Namo Quan Sin Pusa. Namo Amitofo. Namo Amitofo. Namo Amitofo. Namo Milofo. Namo Milofo. Namo Milofo. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Di Zhang Wang Pusa. Namo Di Zhang Wang Pusa. Namo Di Zhang Wang Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava. Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Sakkasangho Sanghang Namami. Okay, you all can be seated. Then turn to page 1 of the chanting book. We will chant from the Vandana onward. Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Buddhang saranang gacchami. Dhammang saranang gacchami. Sanghang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panati pata viramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Adinadana viramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Dame sumichachara viramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Musawada viramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Surameraya majapamadatana
เวรมณีสิกขาปะดังสมาธิยามิน
าวิชันตปฏิปาปูจา offering of light
กันนาสารปฏิเพนะดิเพนะธรรมดังสินะติโลกาดิปังสัมบุดังปูจายามิธรรมโนดังกันดาสัมบารายุเตนะโดเปนะหังสุกังหินะปูจาเยปูจานิยังตังปูจาบัจจานะมุตตมังวันนากันดากุโนเปตังเอตังกุสุมาสันตตินปูจายามิโมนินดาสสิริปาดาสารโรเหภูเจมิบุตังกสุเมนาเนนาปุณเณนามเตนาชะโหตุโมคังปุปังมิลายติยัตตาอิดังเมกายโยตัตตายติวินาสบาวังอาทิวาเสทุโนบันเทปานิยังปริกาปิทังอนุคัมปังอุปาทายะปาติกันหาตุมุตตมังอาทิวาเสทุโนบันเทปาเลปริกาปิทังอนุคัมปังอุปาทายะปาติกันหาตุมุตตมังอาทิวาเสทุโนบันเทโบจานังปริกาปิทังอนุคัมปังอุปาทายะปาติกันหาตุมุตตมัง
Now we will chant the puja aspiration. Based on our understanding of the significance of all these puja offerings. Significance of offering of light. May this offering of light to the Buddha bring forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness or ignorance therein. Significance of offering of water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses off the fires of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense, which we are offerings to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruit of all karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition soon as possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free nibbana. Making of overall aspiration. By the power of all these merits, born of these offerings, may our spiritual faculties of saddha, virya, sati, samadhi, and panya be further strengthened until they become balas or powers. Sharing and transferring merit to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu.
Sadhu.
Okay, let's pay respect to Triple Gem. Pedang Pujayami. Damang Pujayami. Sanghang Pujayami. Okay. You all can be seated. Then just relax body and mind completely. And we can have half an hour of silent awareness meditation. I will set the alarm. For those who already know how to meditate, you can proceed. If you still need to train your mind, then you do it. You can either incorporate the skillful means of mind sweeping method followed by metta. There is this transcript book that you can read from. Then after you have already developed the skill, and when your spiritual faculties of Sata, Virya, Sati, Samadhi and Panya is established, especially your Sati, daily mindfulness, then your mindfulness will be very natural. You will be most of the time aware. When you have your spiritual faculty established, your mind will not be lost in thought, will not be heedless. It will be in the state of heedfulness. Most of the time, it's just aware. With that type of mind, you can meditate very easily. Then the moment you sit, you just relax body and mind. Whatever thought arises, let it arise. Then everything will settle down. And you will go into the stillness very fast. The silence within is very important. If your mind cannot quiet down on its own, means there are still mental hindrances. Your spiritual faculties are still not established. Then you may need method, technique, or other skillful means to anchor your mind, to bring about the initial calmness. This is just temporary skillful means to decondition your heedless thinking or to keep your mental hindrance at bay so that you can anchor your mind to your object of meditation and develop the mindfulness. So a good way is to use anapanasati, mindfulness of the in and out breath. This training is very easy and one of the best. So just relax, silent everything, maintain awareness at the breath, the nostril there. Then when you detect the breathing, breathing in, aware, breathing out, aware. Just repeat this. If you are new, you may not have developed the skill and ability as yet. So you will come to realize that your mind very fast, split second, they will wander off and create thinking. When it happens, don't be develop any aversion or dislike. Just acknowledge it. Understand that the untrained mind is heedless. It will wander off, it will think. So every time it wanders off, bring it back. Every time it wanders off, bring it back and maintain awareness, mindfulness of the in and out breath. When you can do that, not long, your mind will settle down and it will establish itself and develop the initial peace within. We call this piti. Piti is the quietness of the mind. They call it the spiritual calmness, meditative peace within. Yeah. It's a type of calmness that if you experience it for the first time, you will feel very good. And it's like your mind rapture inside there. Or they call spiritual joy. It's a type of joy. As you relax and maintain mindfulness, the joy will become more and more refined, more and more still, more and more stable. Until finally it transforms and become paucity. But before paucity, you may go through a type of calmness which they call sukhang, spiritual blissfulness of mind. Whatever happens, you just relax into it and silence everything and allow the anapanasati to go on until your mind becomes very quiet, very still. Then the mind will realize itself and become quiet on its own. So this is the silent mind, the meditative mind, the tranquility of mind, the stillness of mind, the true mind, the natural state of the true mind, which is just aware, peaceful. In Pali, they call it paucity. Means your mind enters sati and develop paucity. Paucity is the tranquility of mind, stillness of mind that is very quiet, very still. Okay, I'll let you meditate on your own. Then when the half an hour is up, I will ring the bell. Okay. You can slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness that you have developed for as long as you can. Okay, then turn to page 6. We will do the invocation to the devas. Invocation to the devas. In this universe, in their entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good teaching of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release, Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samanta Chiyokawalesu Atra Gacchantu Devata Saddhammang Muni Rajasa Sunantu Sakamokkhadang Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Namo Atasa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa Namo Atasa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa Namo Atasa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa Iti peso bhagava arahang sama sambuddho Vijja charana sampanno sugato lokavido Anuttaro purisa dhamma sarati Satta deva manusana Buddho Bhagavati Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sanditiko Akaliko Ehipaseko Opanayiko Pachyatang Veditabhu Vinohiti Supatipano Bhagavato Savakasango Ujupatipano Bhagavato Savakasango Nyayapatipano Bhagavato Savakasango Samichipatipanno Bhagavato Savakasangho Yadidam Chattari Purisa Yukani Atta Purisa Pugala Esa Bhagavato Savakasangho Ahuneyo Pahuneyo Dakeneyo Anjali Karaneyo Anuttarang Punyang Ketang Lokasati Sadhu Sadhu Sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Tripa Jam. Buddhang Pajami Dhammang Pajami sang hang pujami. Okay, you all can be seated and just relax body and mind. Then we will continue with our sharing. We are at chapter 34, page 499. We are following the book The Buddha and His Teaching by Venerable Narada. The title of today's topic is a continuation. Earlier on, we were going through Nibbana. Today, chapter 34 is on the characteristics of Nibbana. Okay, turn to page 499. Chapter 34, page 499, the characteristics of Nibbana. What is Nibbana, friend? The destruction of lust, the destruction of hatred, and the destruction of delusion. That, friend, is called Nibbana. Yeah. So this is from Samyutta Nikaya. This is another way of explaining what Nibbana is. Nibbana is the absence of the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Means when one has rooted out the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, means one is incapable of suffering, incapable of delusion, ignorant. Okay, we read on. In contradistinction to samsara, the phenomenal existence, Nibbana is eternal. There's a Pali word, duva, desirable, subha, and happy, sukhang. According to Buddhism, all things, mundane and supramundane, are classified into two divisions, namely those conditioned by causes, or they call Sankata Dhamma, and those not conditioned by any causes, Asankata Dhamma. These three are the features of all conditioned things. Sankata Lakkhana, Lakkhanani. So this three phases of all phenomena, arising, ceasing, and the change of state. The Pali words are upada for arising, ceasing is vaya, and change of state is titasa. Titasa anatatang. Arising or becoming is an essential characteristic of everything that is conditioned by a cause or causes. That which arises or becomes is subject to change and dissolution. Every conditioned thing is constantly becoming and is perpetually changing. The universal law of change applies to everything in the cosmos, both mental and physical. They miss out nature also. Mental, physical, and nature. Ranging from the minute germs or the tiniest particle to the highest being or the most massive object. Mind, though imperceptible, changes faster even than matter. That's why we use this word. Everything within the conditioned world is in a state of flux. The English word state of flux is very good. You know what is flux, isn't it? F-L-U-X. Flux means something changing very fast. The following beautiful parable aptly illustrates the fleeting nature of life and its alluring pleasure.
A man was forcing his way through a thick forest beset with thorn and stone. Suddenly, to his great consternation, an elephant appeared and gave chase. He took on his heels through fear, and seeing a well, he ran to hide in it. But to his horror, there was a viper at the bottom of the well. However, lacking other means of escape, he jumped into the well and clung on to the thorny creeper that was growing in it. Looking up, he saw two mice, a white one and a black one, gnawing at the creeper. Over his head, there was a beehive from which occasional drops the honey trickle. This man, foolishly unmindful of this precarious position, was greedily tasting the honey. A kind person volunteered to show him a path of escape, but the greedy man begged to be excused till he had enjoyed himself. The thorny path is samsara, the ocean of life. Man's life is not a bed of roses. It is beset with difficulties and obstacles to overcome, with opposition and unjust criticism, with attacks and insult to be borne. Such is the thorny path of life. The elephant here resembles death, the viper, old age, the creeper, birth, the two mice, day and night. The drop of honey corresponds to the fleeting sensual pleasure. The man represents the so-called human being. The kind person represents the Buddha. So this is the author's way of coming out with that analogy. How you find the analogy? I find it not so realistic. The description is not really compatible with true life. True life, I think, if you can have the understanding, you can describe it better. So in life, what do we experience? Normally, what do we experience? You have gone through life, isn't it? Life is not smooth sailing, isn't it? There are ups and downs, isn't it? So the ups and downs of life is a common reality, because everything moves in a cycle, everything fluctuates, even our economic cycle. Then we have this, what they call the cycle of birth and death. Then in science, you can see a lot of examples of many things dissolving, arising. In fact, if you look at everything in life, our human body also go through the four phase development. You have the birth phase. You are born into this world. Then what happens? There is this grow or growth phase. You grew up and become a adult. Then after you pick, what happened? Your body start to age. Means the growth hormone no more. So no more growth hormone, what happened to you? They say go downhill. I got one classmate told me, he said now only he understand what old age is all about. He said things are going downhill. He is no longer what he used to be. When he was 30-something, he was very active. And even now, he climbed the hill, walk a lot. He still go to China, the Great Wall, the guy who walked the Great Wall more than 10 years. He has been going to China almost every year. I think now is the 13 or 14 years already.
So he like to have this type of active life, but is it body is still a body? Because he can feel it's no longer like when he was young. Then he did share with me that day. I had a lunch with him. He told me, if you want to live your life, make sure you do what you want to do before the age of 75. After that, it's all the way downhill, is it? You got money, also no use. There is a limitation to what you can do. So, in that sense, I think he did anticipated life in the sense that he is observant. He is observant. So life is full of very interesting mystery, adventure. Of course, we have the cycle. The cycle of some people, they go through life in a very, very problematic way. They seem to be hit by problem non-stop ever since birth. Then some, maybe when they are young, they are not so fortunate. They are from a poor family, rural area. But because of their good karma, they work hard, they study hard, then finally they make it. But the journey, as they go through life, they encounter a lot of situation, problems. The first noble truth reality, not easy to deal. But somehow, human being, as long as you are alive, you have to go through all this. So without the Dhamma, without the understanding of this teaching, life is not easy. And all this you can come to understand. Then if you have the Dhamma and you are a cultivator, if you look back into how your life unfolds, then you can have your own story, your own understanding. For us, most of us, I think, we have this good understanding of the Dhamma. That's why we can have the good life. Even though, for me, I was born in the 50s, where the world is still very backward. Actually, during the 50s and the 60s, life was not so easy. Life was tough. That's why I look at my parents and my grandparents. But they also went through life despite the simplistic of life. And they have to endure a lot of hardship. They have to work very hard. Because a lot of things were not developed at that time. Amenities, infrastructure, proper, what they call food and shelter are not available. Even clothing and many things are not available. Not until later. But for me, I look at it, I was very fortunate in the sense that I was born during the 50s. Then by the time 1960, I was already 6 years old. Then I get to go to school. My father sent me to the best school in that state, you know, an English school. Good karma. The rest of my family go Mandarin school, Chinese school, study Mandarin. Then somehow I grew up in a very simple but healthy environment where I can learn many things. Then everything was smooth sailing since I grew up as a kid. Study, everything just take off beautifully. Then like most of the thing goes my way, I seldom have problem. I never have the problem of food and shelter.
and even education, money. I don't have any of this problem. Then my family is quite big. But I can see there is a lot of harmony, a lot of mutual understanding and honesty. That everyone grew up to be successful. And they have their life, they have their karma, they are happy. But not all family are so fortunate, so lucky. I don't know about you all. What about some of you? You want to share your life experience or not? Anybody wants to start? The mic is here. Anybody? Yun Chan also very lucky one, I know. Very blessed, good life. But some are not so blessed. They have their, what they call, ups and downs. Ups and downs. Then some work very hard, make it, then again make mistake, went down again, then strive again, come out, make it, again get into trouble. Have you all come across such people or not? I have seen all these people. Some of them are my schoolmates, my classmates, and my, we call it Kampung people, the place where I was born. That suburb of Alostar town, I think about 4 or 5 kilometers away. So you can see the condition behind that. And most of them from the place I grew up, that village, well, my Google is speaking, My Google, I got a Mr. Google there. Sui An bought it for us. I don't know why it replied. Maybe it heard my voice. So what I saw from my village, that place, actually hardly anybody really managed to have a proper education. The village I came from during that time, the 50s and the 60s, for my generation that time, of course my parents, they are not educated at all. They came from China. My father didn't have any formal education. When he went back to China, he only got about a few months of education, but he didn't go to school. He learned from a rich man's son. The rich man's son got people giving him tuition. So he went there and listened to what he studied from a distance. And that's how he learned. Because my grandfather told him, you better go back to China to at least learn some Mandarin. So he was 8 years old that time. And his karma is so good. When my grandfather sent him back to China, my grandfather was still here. World War I started immediately, after he reached China, World War I started. So my grandfather had to go through that World War I. But he helped to save a lot of property for my uncle, his younger brother, who is a businessman. So he helped him to preserve his shop, his goods and all those things. Well, my grandfather is a very tall and strongly built person. His kung fu is very good. I was told by my father, can whack 20% anytime. He only need a stick, a long stick. He very, very strong. And he passed away very young. He passed away at the age of 40 something. He got this, what they call, Hui Lo is what?
TB, yeah, TB. He died of TB. So, I think that time undernourished, then very difficult condition. So, my eldest brother was only 3 years old when he passed away. I didn't get to see him. When I was born, I was 6 years younger than my brother, eldest brother. I'm second in the family. So when I was born, I only saw his photo. And they tell me a lot of story about him. He was the one that saved my father. My father got this Tianhua, the Tao disease. Very few survived on at that time. Tianhua is what you call? Smallpox or what? Smallpox, I think. No, not measles. It's a very high level of death. So it was a very severe type of sickness. And my grandfather was very good. He asked around, where can he find help? So what happened was, he got another neighbor where the son, smallpox, the son is also having the same disease. And my grandfather decided to immediately go, ask him to come along. He said, no, you go first. If it really worked, if your son survived, come back and tell me. And this type of thing cannot wait on. It seems when my father was brought there by my grandfather, because it was quite a distance, he has to walk quite far and have to carry my father. And when he reached there, the sensei was very good. He looked at my grandfather and my father. He said, you are very lucky. I can save your son, he said. If you come one day later, I cannot save him anymore. And because of that, my father survived. And I can come to the world. The neighbor, the son died. Just by the time my grandfather went back, told him his son already died. Too late. Then even despite what happened, my father grew up. Yeah. Life was very tough, but he is a very good father, very responsible. My mother too. They were very, very hardworking, very responsible. And you know, Hakka Mui, my mother, worked very hard, bring us all up. And my father too, sacrificed a lot for us. Very thrifty, just to make sure all of us have what we need. Then he emphasized on two things, very important, which I treasure a lot. Our citizenship, and our documents, birth certificate, everything, and education. So because of that, I have a lot of gratitude towards my parents, my father. Especially my father, despite uneducated, selfless, never selfish, willing to sacrifice. And they used to tell us when he go through problem and all those things. Sometimes like, because we stay in this village, at that house. Whenever there is fire, you know how traumatic the thing is or not. It can just burn and burn down all the houses very fast or not. There is all of timber and atap. Very easy to catch fire on. And these people smoke cigarette, they just throw and it can have fire on, bush fire. Then people panic. But the villagers were very, very cooperative because they know their life, their whatever life depends on their cooperation among themselves to fight the fire. So whenever got fire, everybody come out, even middle of the night. And with the pail, the tong, they don't wait for firemen, not enough time. They will go to the river and take the water and just do what they can. Then some of them are so experienced, they get the gunny sack. Wet the gunny sack, then they went up and just
doze off the fire. So during that time, I still remember we were very young. My father used to tell my mom, "You stay with the children. Don't wake them up. Let them sleep." Then my father go and settle everything and help those people. Oh, well, my father is medical shop and people respect him and like him because he help a lot of people too. People with sickness. Oh, he went into this line was because my grandfather brought him to a Chinese sensei and saved him. That's why he also end up medical shop, studying all this to save people. Yeah. So they have their karma, their parami. So what I look at is the reality, the life, existence. Yeah. So depending on karma, I witness a lot of things. Some very young, they pass away. When I was in my hometown, the village there, there are at least 8 of them. They are still kids though, they died. 4 of them died in the river swimming. Swimming in the river. A lot of incidents died, they just died. Then some died accident. Then some for no reason, don't know what happened, fall sick and just died like that. Very young. And that time was very common. And our family was so lucky and so blessed. We got 9 brothers and sisters. All grew up very well, very healthy. And my neighbor, the old lady there, she was very observant. She got 1 daughter with the children. Every time she falls sick and got problem. You know what she suggests, the old lady suggests to the daughter? No? He said, "You better go and talk to our neighbor. See whether they are willing to adopt your children or not. They will grow up well," he said. Because very difficult to survive. They find it every now and then having problem and all those things. But whether you believe it or not, they came and asked. And my father also very kind. He said, "Why?" My mother also asked, "Why?" Then the old lady said, "I have been observing you all." He said, "You got 9 children." He said, "All 9 survived." No? But during that time, a lot of death. No? And your children all like no problem. That's why he asked my father to become the stepfather and my mother to be the stepmother. So they agree. Godfather. Foster father. They say ke lao pe, ke lao bua, kai ye. So after they adopt, you don't believe. The son recovered. No more problem. And every year, they will buy things and offer to my father and my mother every New Year. And they come over. So later on, she grew up to be a successful child too. Then when my father passed away, he also came and... No, Toha. Wear the black clothes like us. More for my father. Join us and do all the same. Well, we treat him as one of our brothers. So there are a lot of this type of thing. Then people who know how to see, they will know. Sometimes it's their parami, their karma. Then he just came over, follow tradition, pay respect to my father, my mother. Then I think make some offering to my parent. Then my parent, in return, give an ang pao to him. And just like that. And the merits. And the maybe karmic thing that they receive. They saw. Immediately after that, the problem gone. The sickness all gone. Then another son, I think, the leg, don't know what happened. Then NSC doctor all cannot cure. The pulse all coming out.
need to amputate the whole thing. Then my mother, he also know herbs. Then he saw. Then he asked the neighbor, he said, "Is this your son?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "How come he always in the house?" He said, "Because his leg got that problem. Can't go to school and all those things." Then my mother went and have a look. My mother said, "Can I have a look?" Then he remembered in China, somebody like that survived. He went and looked for the herb for them. Oh, he went and looked for the herbs. In the behind our village, there is a secondary forest, I think. She went and looked. And she found the herb. My mother very good at looking for all this. Then he make it into like medicine like that. Then ask the son to wrap it around. And within 12 hours, you know, they can see, you know, the son can sleep for the first time. You know, because of the pain, cannot sleep. Then the next day, woke up, the thing has healed a lot. And they were so happy. That's why they were very kind to my parents, my mother. They every year also will offer things. Then later, our neighbor also become quite successful. But the old lady got two sons, very hardworking. So you look at karma, you can see. Meant to be, will be. But some were really unfortunate. No reason, just die like that. Then you can see the very diverse way of people with different karmic condition behind growing up, surviving in a very, very difficult environment, difficult condition. And that place, like I say, hardly anybody has any proper education. To go to Form 3, able to go to Form 1 and Form 3, is a very rare thing, you know. Most of them drop out before Standard 6. We have poverty, no money. Then those who manage to go through Standard 6, not many can pass Form 3. Form 3 is like very, very difficult, impossible at that time for them. Then whoever passed Form 3 is considered very lucky already at that time. One of the rare ones already. So under that environment, I grew up. And I did very well, education-wise, academic. Until they don't believe. Yes, I really did very well. A lot of things, a lot of things you can see. So, your karma actually decide a lot of things. But even among my family, not everybody has the luxury of education, I mean success in education. My eldest brother also, I think Standard 6, draw out. Then I got one sister, Form 3 also, gone, draw out. The other younger brother, two younger brother also same. One of them, I went back and helped the youngest one, then he passed Form 3. But Form 4, Form 5 again, kuya, completely. Cannot. Like Yen Chan share, yes.
Grew up here. We are
PJ,
PJ, we are all okay. My classmates go all the way to Form 5, Form 6.
Because here is Petaling Jaya and Kuala Lumpur. We are considered big city. Big city. And life,
no problem.
Life is very good because most of you all in PJ and KL, the schools are better. Then also the condition, everything is a lot better because you are the best town, the most urban town for Malaysia, as far as Malaysia is concerned. But if you go to the rural area, life is not what the city people are. This rural area, they are still very backward. Even now, you go to Kelantan, Terengganu, or even certain part of Kedah, the remote area, the remote village, life is still tough, not easy. But over the years, opportunity for education has improved. That is a fact. Like now, to have a university degree is like very common. Very common. But during my time, no. You can go to Form 5, you already consider very good. And my school is the best school. And yet, we only have, I think primary school, we got about 10 classes. 10 classes. Quite big. We are one of the best school, the best school in the whole state. Then by the time we reach secondary school, I think left with about eight classes. Then when we go to Form 5, again expand back to 10 because all the other school, they don't have Form 4 or 5 come to my school. Then when it come to Form 6, my school was the only school with Form 6. All the other school don't have. And by the time we reach Form 6, there is only 3 science classes left. But arts, they still got about 5 classes. And that is all the schools from all over Kedah State who can go to Form 6. So the whole state got only about 8 classes left for those who can go to Form 6. Then after that, go to U is even more rare. So during that time, was not easy. Life was actually tough. But depend on your karma. If you have good karma, you do very well. Like for me, when I was in my school, which is the best school, my class, the A class, everybody did very well. But all the other class, big problem. Oh, big problem. They end up gangsterism, drug, and a lot of other things. Not easy. But the good class, our class is very exceptional. The teacher also like us. They remember us. Our class is very, very special. We used to have this gathering. We organize 40 years, 50 years. I think the recent one is about 50 over years, almost 60 years. Since primary school, we were together. So primary school, I was 6 years old. So 65 minus 6, 59 years anniversary. When we went back for the gathering. A lot of us were together in the primary school, but our whole class, they did very well. Yeah, Yun Chan, you want to add something?
No. You're comparing from when you were in primary school.
Yeah. We were together in primary school.
Because I only attended my 50th anniversary, that's when we left school.
Okay.
And I'm older than
you. Because we were together since primary school. Our primary school automatically go to the secondary school. These two schools are together, side by side. So if you study there, you are assured of that. We call it Sultan Abdul Hamid College, where Mahathir came from. Mahathir, they are our alumni. All the royalty study there. All the doctors, those famous people, wealthy people, they study there. But somehow my father was willing to spend the money. He go and ask around for the best school. Then he make sure I go to that school. Because of karma, meant to be. That's why I study English. I didn't study Mandarin. All my brothers and sisters all go Chinese school. Anybody got anything to share about your life? The way the author described the analogy for life is to me not so like relevant or not so realistic in that sense. What we go through in life is a lot more, a lot more. And for those who have the ability to reflect, contemplate, and look back, then if you are observant, you have mindfulness and the Dhamma, you can see actually in our society, living beings of different karmic background, how they actually go through life. Even after so many years of sharing, this year is coming to be the 15th anniversary. And during this number of years of sharing, I have met so many people with problems, with life problem, First Noble Truth reality problem. And sometimes you listen, you knew it's their karmic. Very traumatic, very severe. Not everybody is so lucky like some of us. Smooth sailing, like everything go your way, as if life is so beautiful, so meaningful. But with the Dhamma, you can have that type of life. Okay, we go on. Page 502. I think we are at the third paragraph. Sorrow is essential to life and cannot be evaded. This one is in a way quite true. But not necessary, I look at it. You have your past cultivation, you have your parami. In fact, life is beautiful, meaningful. Oh, sorry, there's a paragraph before that we haven't covered. The temporary material happiness is merely the gratification of some desire. When the desired thing is gained, another desire arises. In satire are all desire. So this is basic Dhamma for people to develop the understanding. They say craving is a bottomless pit. Desire and craving. They use the word in satire or desire and craving, which is very good. Then he says, sorrow is essential to life and cannot be evaded. Do you agree to this sentence? If you have good life, you will not agree. But for most people, I think this statement is a fair statement. Sorrow is essential to life. What is your view? Do you believe in what this author shared? Is sorrow an essential part of life? To be unhappy, to be sorrowful. Yeah, but is it necessary for life? Not necessary then. For you, Yunjai, because you have good life, isn't it? You don't need to have sorrow, isn't it? So here is a sorrow is essential to life, you know. Because to them, you must go through suffering. You must develop sorrow, lamentation, unhappiness. And he somehow used the word cannot be evaded, no. So in a sense, I think the author went through tough life. That's why he became monk, maybe. I don't know. Nibbana being the unconditioned, it should be unconditioned, not non-conditioned. It's eternal, desirable, and happy. Here, some of the English translation, I think, may not be true. Nibbana being unconditioned is correct. Eternal depends on the meaning, because it's never born actually. That's why it never dies. In the sense, it has eternal life. Then, desirable, I think the translation is wrong, because you cannot desire for Nirvana. Desire is a craving. If you desire, you cannot have it. Sukhang is correct. Sukhang means when you go through that cessation, it's really Paramang Sukhang, the highest peace or highest happiness. The happiness of Nirvana should be differentiated from ordinary worldly happiness. This is correct. Nirvanic bliss grows neither stale nor monotonous. It is a form of happiness that never varies, never fluctuates. It arises by allaying passion. The Pali word is upasama, unlike the temporary worldly happiness which result from the gratification of some desire, which is vedayitta. In actual fact, Nibbana is not a mind state. It's not a mind at all. That's why it's not really Nibbanic bliss in the actual sense. Yeah, Nibbana is cessation. Cessation means what? No more birth, no more old age, sickness and death. That's why it's so peaceful. Everything ceases. Nothing can make you like unhappy, miserable or suffer or whatever. That's why it is the highest peace or the highest happiness. But it's not a blissful state of mind. In the sense, because you experience Nirvana, the form and mind went through the cessation, compared to the mind that has this universal characteristics of dukkang, when you lack wisdom, of course Nirvana is beautiful, perfect. You can call it a blissful state. Paramang Sukhang, the highest happiness or highest peace. So here, they use some of the words without proper understanding of what that Nibbanic experience is. The funny thing is, you call it Nibbanic bliss, Nibbanic experience, but it's not something that you can experience, because it's not of mind. It's the unconditioned, where everything ceases. It arises by allying passion, upasama, unlike that those temporary worldly happiness which result from the gratification of some desire. Oh, this one we have gone through. In the Bahu Vidaniya Sutta, the Buddha enumerated 10 grades of happiness, beginning with gross material pleasure which result from the pleasure or pleasant stimulation of the senses. As one ascends higher and higher in the moral plane, the type of happiness become even more exalted, sublime, and subtle. So much so that the world scarcely recognizes it as happiness. In the first jhana, one experiences a transcendental happiness, sukhang, absolutely independent of the five senses. This, the pleasure of the sense, this happiness is realized by inhibiting the desire from the pleasure of the senses, highly prized by the materialist. In the fourth jhana, however, even this type of happiness is discarded as coarse and unprofitable, and equanimity, upekkha, is termed happiness. The Buddha say, fivefold ananda are the sense bond. Sensual bond. What are the five? Form, cognizable by the eye, desirable, lovely, charming, infatuating, accompanied by thirst, and arousing the dust of the passion. sound cognizable by ear, odor cognizable by the nose, flavor cognizable by the tongue, contact cognizable by the body, desirable, lovely, charming, infatuating, accompanied by dust, and arousing the dust of passion. These ananda are the five sense bonds. Whatever happiness or pleasure arises from this sensual bond is known as sensual happiness. So happiness born of the sense experience. Eh? So these are the first five. Then whoso should declare this is the highest happiness and pleasure which beings may experience, I do not grant him that. And why? Because there are other happiness more exalted and sublime. And what is that other happiness more exalted and sublime? Here a bhikkhu completely separated from the sense desire, remote from immoral state, with initial and sustained application of thought, born of seclusion, in joy and happy abiding in the first ecstasy, or they call it the first jhana. This is happiness more exalted and sublime. Means when you are without thought. That's why he said when you apply your thought and sustain your thought there, means no more thinking. Then you will experience the jhanic factor. The jhanic factor are vitakka, vichara. Vitakka is applied thought. Vichara is sustained thought. Then when your mind can become sustained without the thinking, then you will experience piti, the third jhanic factor. Then the fourth jhanic factor is sukhang, and the last one is one-pointedness, ekagatang. But should anyone declare this is the highest happiness and pleasure which beings may experience, I do not grant him that. And why? Where there is another happiness yet more exalted and sublime. Here a bhikkhu stealing initial and sustained thought means vitakka vichara. Having tranquility within mind one-pointedness, initial and sustained application of thought having ceased as a result of concentration, lives in joy and happiness abiding in the second jhana. This is the other happiness more exalted and sublime than the first jhana. Yet should anyone declare that this is the highest happiness and pleasure experienced by being, I do not grant it. There is happiness more exalted. Then the Buddha go on and describe. Here, a bhikkhu, after eliminating joy, that is piti, serene, mindful, and completely conscious, experiencing in the body that of which the Arya say, endowed with equanimity and mindfulness, he abide in bliss. This is really sukhang, bliss. Thus he live abiding in the third ecstasy or third jhana. This is the other happiness and pleasure more exalted and sublime. Then he continued to say, should anyone declare that this is the highest happiness, I do not grant it. There is happiness more exalted. Here a bhikkhu abandoning pleasure and pain, leaving behind former joy and grief, painless pleasures, perfect in equanimity and mindfulness, live abiding in the fourth jhana. This is the other happiness more exalted and sublime. So this one is the fourth jhana, where they have actually perfected the concentration, the four type of form jhana, form concentration. So this one will bring them to the fourth jhana, which is equanimity of mind. They stay in that state without thought. They have the object of meditation as ekagata, one-pointedness, nothing else. Yeah. However, were this declared to be the highest happiness, I do not grant it. Again, the Buddha said it is not the highest. There is happiness more sublime. Then the Buddha said, here in a bhikkhu, passing entirely beyond the perception of form, with the disappearance of sense reaction, free from attention to perception of diversity, things, infinite space, infinity is space, and live abiding in the realm of infinite space. This is happiness. This other happiness is more exalted and sublime. Then again he said, there is another state higher. He said, here a bhikkhu transcending entirely the realm of infinite space. Then he used the word thing. Actually it's not thing. You just silent your mind and reflect or contemplate. Infinite is consciousness, and live abiding in the rhyme of infinite consciousness. So this one is the formless jhana. They call it the sixth and the seventh jhana. Oh, sorry, the fifth and the sixth jhana. Then he said, this other happiness is more exalted and sublime, and yet, should this be declared the highest happiness, I do not grant. There is higher happiness. Then the Buddha said, here a bhikkhu transcending the realm of infinite consciousness, reflect, there is nothing whatsoever, and live abiding in the realm of nothingness. So this one is the seventh jhana, the third formless jhana, arupa jhana. This other happiness is more exalted and sublime than the earlier one. And still, were this declared the highest happiness, I do not grant it. This is happiness more exalted. Then he said, here a bhikkhu passing beyond the realm of nothingness, live abiding in the realm of neither perception nor non-perception. This other happiness is more exalted and sublime. Yet whoever should declare this is the highest bliss and happiness or pleasure which beings may experience, I do not grant that. And why? Because yet another happiness is more exalted and sublime. And what is this happiness more exalted and sublime? Here a bhikkhu, utterly transcending the realm of neither perception or nor non-perception, live having attained the cessation of perception and sensation, nirodha. This ananda is the other happiness more exalted and sublime. Of all the 10 grades of happiness, this is the highest and most sublime. This transcendental state is nirodha sahampati, cessation of form and mind. That is experience. That is experiencing nibbana in this life itself. Yeah. So this one, the Buddha conclude, that's why he say is the highest happiness, paramang sukang in that sense. But this one is not a conditioned state. That's why he say they experience complete cessation. Yeah. He even used the word cessation of perception and sensation. Means everything ceases. The mind ceases. There is no perception. There is no sensation. There is no mind state at all. As the Buddha himself has anticipated, one may ask, how can that state be called highest happiness when there is no consciousness to experience it? That is the question, when there is no consciousness to experience it. So what you think? You want it, or you want to go through that type of experience? You don't want nibbana. Then what do you want? You want suffering. The Buddha replies, he said, "Nay, disciple, the Tathagata does not recognize bliss merely because of a pleasurable sensation, but disciple, wherever bliss is attained, there and there only does the accomplished one recognize bliss. I proclaim," say the Buddha, "that everything experienced by the senses is sorrow." You agree or not? Huh? Everything, the Buddha say, that everything experienced by the senses is sorrow. There is also a saying in the ancient path, isn't there? Huh? All pleasure is a prelude to suffering. All sense pleasure is a prelude to suffering. You can understand that. Because we live in a conditioned world. Whatever pleasure that you experience, they will come to an end. Then they will change. Then when there is condition for it, it will arise again. When there is no more condition, you will lose it. When you lose it, what happens? You cannot get what you want. Then what happens? You become? Sorrowful, afflicted. Suffering arises when you cannot get what you want, true or not, because of your attachment, craving, delusion. Then here, the Buddha asks, but why? Then the Buddha replied, but one in sorrow craves to be happy. And the so-called happy craves to be happier still. So in satire is worldly happiness. That's why in that sense, you will finally end up in unhappiness or sorrowful. Unless you have wisdom to accept the reality of the moment. Whatever happened, condition like that, things will be like that, then you can be at peace. Otherwise, when you cannot get what you want, suffering will arise. You will be afflicted. In conventional term, the Buddha declares, Nibbana paramang sukang. Nibbana is the highest bliss. It is bliss supreme because it is not a kind of happiness experienced by the senses. It is a blissful state of positive relief from the ills of life. This is correct, this statement. The very fact of the cessation of suffering is ordinarily termed happiness. Though this is not an appropriate word to depict its real nature. Then we go on to the next page. This question is very interesting. Where is Nibbana? Yeah, can you locate where is Nibbana? In the Milinda Pada, Milinda Pangha, the Venerable Nagasena answered this question thus. There is no spot looking east, south, west or north, above, below or beyond, where Nibbana is situated. And yet Nibbana is. And he who orders his life aright, grounded in virtue, and with rational attention, may realize it, whether he live in Greece, China, Alexander, or in Kosala. Yeah. So this one is the form and mind that goes through it, will understand what that thing is, because it's not located somewhere. Last time I remember, there is one author who wrote this book, See You in Nibbana. He thought it's a place where you can gather. No. Just as fire is not stored up in any particular place, but arises when the necessary condition exists, so Nibbana is said not to exist in a particular place, but it is attained when the necessary conditions are fulfilled. What you need is wisdom. when you have complete wisdom or very, very high wisdom, the mind can cease and you can experience that Nibbana. The form and mind will go through it. Then cessation will happen. In the Rohitasa Sutta, the Buddha states, in this very phantom-like body, along with its perception and thought, do I proclaim the world, the origin of the world, the cessation of the world, and the path that lead to the cessation of the world. So this is the Four Noble Truths. Rohitasa Sutta. Here, the world means suffering. The cessation of the world, therefore, means the cessation of suffering, which is Nibbana, which is the Four Noble Truths. Once Nibbana is dependent upon this one phantom-like body, it is not something that is created, nor is it something to be created. Yeah. Then down there, the notes are quite interesting. Oh, there is no translation. Oh, never mind, no translation. Oh, number two, got translation. Verily, this Nibbana is to be attained or realized by means of the four paths of sainthood and is not to be produced. Oh, this one is from the Visuddhi Magga. The four paths are the four stages of sainthood. First stage, second stage, third stage, and the fourth stage of sainthood. They are referred to the Sotapat, Sakadagami, Anagami, and Arahanta. Next page, 508. Nibbana is there, where the four elements of cohesion, Apo, Patavi is actually earth element, but here he put extension. Heat is Tejo, and Vayu is motion, or wind element, finds no footing. So the four elements find no footing means there is no form in mind. Referring to where Nibbana is, Samyutta Nikaya states, where the four elements that cleave and stretch and burn and move up, and move no further footing find. Then in the Udana, the Buddha said, just as O Bhikkhu, notwithstanding those rivers that reaches the great ocean and the torrent of rain that fall from the sky, neither a deficit nor a surplus is perceptible in the great ocean. Even so, despite the many bhikkhus that enter the remainderless parinibbana, there is neither a deficit nor a surplus in the elements of nibbana. Means nibbana is not a place where it is, where you can say there is a limit to how many you can go in. It is saturated already. Means nobody else can realize Nibbana. No such thing. The Nibbana never gets saturated. It's an enlightenment. When you go through enlightenment, you will go through cessation or realize Nibbana. But it's not a mind state. So the word realize also not appropriate. So Nibbana, Nibbana is therefore not a kind of heaven where a transcendental ego resides, but a Dhamma, an attainment which is within the reach of us all. An eternal heaven which provides all forms of pleasure desired by man, and where one enjoys happiness to one's heart's content is practically inconceivable. It is absolutely impossible to think that such a place could exist permanently anywhere.
Granting that there is no place where Nibbana is stored up, King Milinda questioned Venerable Nagasena whether there is any basis whereon a man stand and ordering his life aright realized Nibbana. Yes, O King, there is such a basis. Which then, Venerable Nagasena, is that basis? Virtuous, O King, is that basis. For if grounded in virtue and careful in attention, whether in the land of Scythiana or the Greece, whether in China or in Tartary, whether in Alexandria or in Nikumba, whether in Benares or in Kosala, whether in Kashmir or Gandhara, whether in Kashmir or in Gandhara, whether on the mountain top or in the highest heavens, wherever he may be, the man who orders his life aright will attain Nibbana. The other question is, what attain Nibbana? What do you think? Yeah? Do you think you attain Nibbana? What attain Nibbana? Yeah? Actually, the word attain is wrong. It's not something that you attain. It's a realization. When the form and mind, through wisdom, realizes itself and ceases, that is what Nibbana is. It's not to be attained. It is nothing. It's not a mind state. You cannot attain to it. You can follow. Yeah? That's why it is to be realized. Realized means the form and mind through wisdom understand. Then no more ignorant. That's why this mind can cease on its own. And when it ceases, even the pure awareness also no more. The pure awareness is actually our true mind, our true nature. When there is no thought, that thing is there. But when you realize Nibbana, that pure awareness also gone, no more. Nothing exists. Everything ceases. The whole form and mind shut down. That's why the brain, everything up there, no movement at all. Because there is no consciousness. Okay, we go through that topic. What attains Nibbana? This question must necessarily be set aside as irrelevant, for Buddhism denies the existence of a permanent entity or an immortal soul. The so-called being of which we often hear of as the vastment of the soul is a mere bundle of condition factor. That's why I call it a bundle of memory. The Arahant Bhikkhuni Vijira says, and just as when the parts are rightly said, the word chariot arises in our mind, so does our usage convenient to say I being when the aggregates are there. According to Buddhism, the so-called human being constitute of mind and matter, namarupang, which constantly change with lightning rapidity. Apart from these two component or composite factor, there exists no permanent soul or an unchanging permanent entity. The so-called I is also an illusion. So it's a self-delusion. Instead of an eternal soul or illusory I, Buddhism posits a dynamic life flux, santiti, which flows at infinitum as long as it is fed with ignorance and craving. When these two root causes are eradicated by any individual on attaining arahantship, they cease to flow with his final death. That's what you call parinibbana. In conventional term, one says the Arahant has attained Parinibbana or passed away into Nibbana. As right now and here, there is neither a permanent ego nor an identical being, it is needless to state that there can be no I or a soul, Atta, in Nibbana. Then the Visuddhimagga states, misery only does exist, none miserable, nor doer is there, not save the deed is found. Nibbana is, but not the man who seeks it. The path exists, but not the traveler on it. The chief difference between the Buddhist or the Buddha's concept of Nibbana and the Hindu concept of Nirvana or Mukti lies in the fact that Buddhists view their goal without an eternal soul or creator, while Hindus do believe in an eternal soul and a creator. Then they also have this Atman. Atman. You heard of Atman? Atman? A-T-M-A-N? They call that the ultimate soul. The permanent, like ultimate self. This is the reason why Buddhism can neither be called eternalism or nihilism. In Nibbana, nothing is eternalized, nor is anything annihilated. As Sir Alvin Arnock say, if any teach Nibbana is to cease, say out to such they lie. If any teach Nirvana is to live, say out to such they err. So it's neither cease or live. But it's not easy for living being to understand. Because Nirvana is not a mind state. It's the unconditioned, just like what the Buddha say. If there does not exist the unconditioned, escape from the conditioned world is impossible. There is no way out. That's why you have to realize the unconditioned, the cessation. And the unconditioned is not a mind state. It's not something that you can perceive or comprehend or attain or come to know. It must be admitted that this question of Nibbana is the most difficult in the teaching of the Buddha. However much we may speculate, we shall never be in a position to comprehend its real nature. The best way to understand Nibbana is to try to realize it. At least this is correct. This is wise. With our own intuitive knowledge, although Nibbana cannot be perceived by the five senses and lies in obscurity in so far as the average man is concerned, the only straight path that leads to Nibbana has been explained by the Buddha, and all the necessary detail and is laid open to all. The goal is now clouded, but the method of achievement is perfectly clear, and when that achievement is realized, the goal as clear as the moon fits or free from cloud. We finish. After that, the next chapter is the way to Nibbana. Wow, not bad. He teaches you how to go there as if it's a place. Okay, good. At least we cover this chapter. So the characteristic of Nibbana is not easy to comprehend. You remember in the salutation to the Sangha, to the Dhamma, the characteristics of enlightenment or the Dhamma, the Buddha mentioned there. He said,
this Dhamma or realization of Nibbana can only be realized by the wise, each for themselves. You remember? Pacetang Viditabbo Vinohiti. You know the meaning of it. The wise is the former mind that has developed the penetrative wisdom, understanding, then went through that cessation. That one is the wise one, but that one is not you. That one is your former mind. That one is dependent originating, condition arising, not a permanent unchanging entity. That's why that one is what the Buddha called the wise one. So this Nibbana can only be realized by the wise one that has the wisdom, each for himself. Means the form and mind that has the wisdom to enable it to go through that cessation, because it's connected. The wisdom is connected to this form and mind. And because of the wisdom, the cessation takes place. Then after the cessation, if you are not supposed to parinibbana yet, the consciousness will come back. And because the consciousness come back, the form and mind that go through that will have perfect mindfulness. That's why it will understand and witness how the origin of life come. How from the source, from the unconditioned, the consciousness come back. And when the consciousness come back, how it animate this form and mind back into his former condition to become a human being again, or a living being again. Those who go through, they will know. That's why you can understand all those things. That's why my nature, after it has gone through all those, it can understand what all this. How the cessation happened also it know, because it went through that. Then when it come back, it saw how all these things start again. When the consciousness shut down completely, this brain here, our brain, normally when you are alive, you are conscious, this consciousness here create a lot of mental activity. There's a lot of movement up here. I don't know how many of you are aware. You got the mindfulness and the awareness here. There's a lot of sankhara movement in your brain area. A lot. Unending. And very, very active. But later on, as you meditate, as you develop more and more wisdom, as you straighten your view, you realize this avijja is being weakened. Once you have straightened your view, you have less and less of this wrong view. Then you have more and more of this right view. Means your avijja or ignorant or wrong view has been attenuated, reduced. So when it's reduced, avijja paccaya sankhara also reduced. That's why here the mental activity, the movement also reduced. That's how you become more and more quiet, more and more peaceful, and more aware. And without going into a conditioned state, without having to concentrate, through wisdom, understanding, it will happen by itself. That's why you have to meditate with a free mind. You cannot meditate with a conditioned mind, because that one is not the real one. Then when this wisdom reaches a state where it completely understands, and you know what happened to the former mind, even though, think also like that, don't think also like that, no different. That's why this form of mind, it will cease, it will not think. Then when it ceases, very funny, you know, the conditioner has to be exactly there. That wisdom and the understanding, then it happened. And when it happened, this whole brain shut down, become completely quiet. No activity, no movement at all. Nothing. But you are not dead. Then no heartbeat. Nothing. No pulse. If the doctor were to use the stethoscope, they say you're dead already. But you are not dead. your body will not turn cold. There will be some warm. But it's completely like a dead person. Completely like a dead person. And there is no consciousness, nothing. Everything's still. But if it's before your time to go, or parinibbana, then that form and mind, that being that went through that cessation, the consciousness will come back. When it come back, you have no control. But it will come back. But the moment it come back, you are fully aware. You are fully aware. And you will know how the consciousness come in and from where it move. Then how it animate back your brain and all those things. Because in 1989 when it happened, I was in Cameron Highland. The Sambao Si, the place where we have our retreat. The Triple Gem Temple. That was 1989, 30 years ago. 30 years ago. Initially, it was a glimpse. I remember, it was a glimpse. Then after that, everything understood. Because the mind went into that cessation, just a glimpse. Then the spacious awareness without a center suddenly ceased. Then there was complete still. Completely nothing at all, the unconditioned. Then the next consciousness come back to normal, but in that meditative state of oneness. That's why during that time, my nature was like one with everything. Even the distant vibration, the sound, normal being cannot hear. But if the nature wants to hear or understand, it can. And like everything is oneness within. Then after that, very funny, after that, the cessation keep on coming on. After that, whenever I meditate, I lie down, it keep on coming. Then it happened for very long. But it's because from the past. Then when it go through, it's like it breeze through. Like all the stages, because this nature has done before. It breeze through very fast. Then I reach back to my past level very fast. To the stage where I cultivate before. I reach back that state very fast. But then I need the transformation of this physical body. That's why the gateway was very important. It cut short my training for at least 10 to 15 years. Without the gateway, the pure energy cannot go in so fast. Then to open up this whole area, to receive this type of fine vibration, the pure energy, the wisdom energy, it will take a long time. But because I was able to locate it because of my last guy, he showed it to me, and immediately after that, I don't need him. I straight away understood what this thing is. But for me to locate, my nature tell me at least I need 10 to 15 years on my own to find out that gateway. But because of my vow, he came and he showed it to me. The moment he showed it to me, that moment onward, I know what that thing is. That's why I went in straight away. The whole thing become very still. After that, it's like never turn back. Then the transformation just happened by itself. It's like a lot of things happened. Then later on, the Mandimaya also collapsed. Everything happened. I remember within 9 months, everything. Then the nature inside shine forth. That's why I remember you last time told me, Bhakti, you should go for a retreat. I also don't know how to answer you. Because that nature shine forth that time, because the mundane mind collapsed, the sankhara all gone, no more of those gross mundane mind. So it's like the cloud all dispersed already. Then that nature shine forth, means my nature, the awareness, shine out.
means I am like winning. The mind has no dwelling at all. No, doesn't dwell anymore. Means no need to do mindfulness because the whole nature come out already. The whole nature is just aware like that. That's why it's constantly aware. Ever mindful. It's all the time like that. Never without that, because no more mundane mind. That's why that nature becomes the supra mundane mind. Come on, like that. That time, how to talk to people? How to tell people? Nobody will understand. Yeah, it's completely way beyond what normal being can understand. Okay, I heard the alarm just now. I think we end. Okay, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we will do the sharing of merit, transfer merit, then blessing for the nation. Then after that, you can make your aspiration. Akasata ca bumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa cirang wakantu lokasasana itta watta amehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo imina punyang kamina mami bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yāvā nivāna pātiyā sādhu, sādhu, sādhu. Okay, pay respect Lord Buddha and all the worthy ones, then we end.